taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
Hello, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read, we study the Constitution. Teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me today. You know, I've said this before, but I am a product of the public school system. Yeah, mostly in the 1970s. Now, I know we pick a lot on the public school systems. I like to say I learned more about the Constitution from Saturday morning cartoons than I did in 12 years of government-run education. Thank you very much, Schoolhouse Rock. But I have to admit that, you know, I did learn to read and write and do basic mathematics, a little bit of algebra, a little bit of chemistry, a little bit of physics. It's where I learned of my aptitude for computers and programming and stuff like that. So I can't say that it was all bad, but I know that when we were expecting our daughter, and when our daughter was young, my wife and I quickly decided that she was not going to public school, that we would end up homeschooling her through, well, 11 years of a 12-year education. That's because she was done in 11 years. And in fact, the only reason it took that long is she wanted to have a graduation with a friend of hers who was also homeschooling. But when I look at the state of education today, I see a lot less of the reading, writing, and arithmetic that took up so much of the time in my era. And I see so much more of politics and philosophies and in many cases, just general nonsense. So I want to take some time today and I want to take a look at the education system, some news stories about the education system, about what we're teaching our children, and then maybe wrap up with what can be done about it. Now, I know a lot of us pick on the education system, and I know many teachers, several teachers, and most of the teachers I know, they feel just as stuck. They want to teach. They want to educate. They have a heart for educating children. Many of them actually provide certain supplies out of their own pocket because they're not provided by the school. We spend thousands and thousands of dollars a year on our students, but the quality of the education isn't getting any better. In fact, in many places, it's getting worse. Now, there are cities where what half of those who graduate are illiterate or where, you know, high school students are reading at kindergarten level. And we can easily focus on them. But I want to look at the bigger picture. You see, we have public schools because early in this country's history, in fact, I believe even before we were a country, we recognized the importance of some basic education, some literacy, the ability to read, to write, to do basic mathematics, and the importance that had in living a well-rounded life. And we decided as a whole, as communities, I should say, that we would put money towards educating our children. That we would not, you know, while students of parents with means could send their children to better schools, we always had a certain basic level of education. And you can, you know, go back to a Little House on the Prairie times and the local, the one-room schoolhouse and the school marm and, you know, how communities would pay to have somebody teach their children. And it was considered proper. But schools then got taken over by the states. And okay, some states were better than others, but more and more the bureaucracy took over, and more the elites took over. See, we decided that you needed to be an expert. You need to have a degree to teach children of all levels. And the problem with that is, again, we end up with the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy of city, state, and now federal education departments. So if we're going to have schools, we need teachers. So when I stumbled across this article about how teachers and administrators in the New York City Department of Education sued the city because they were not given religious exemptions, I was not surprised. We've been dealing with this for 2 years. 2 years we've watched while government pretty much ignores the constitutions that created those governments, ignores the rights of the people, and imposes their own philosophies. Now, this actually went to the Supreme Court, where they requested an emergency injunction so that the teachers could teach and the administrators could administer with their religious exemptions while the case continued to go through the court, and it was denied. Justice Sotomayor handles that circuit, and she denied the emergency injunction on the teachers, supervisors, staff, nope, they have to abide by the rule of the Department of Education until the case is ultimately decided. Now, think about this from the teacher's point of view and the administrators and the staff that says your religious exemptions don't matter. Now, imagine, now, again, there are plenty of examples of bad teachers. I've had some pretty good teachers. I had some pretty mediocre teachers. I don't think I really had a bad teacher. But imagine you're a teacher and you want to teach, but you're told you have to participate in a medical experiment in order to teach, and your government won't protect you from that. You have one government, the city of New York, that is demanding that you participate in a medical experiment as a condition of working. You have another government, the state of New York, which is also supporting them. Now you have the federal government says, no, we're not going to interfere with this, at least not yet. Not exactly the situation for bringing in the best and brightest. And teachers can have a huge impact on people's lives. I remember several of my teachers, two in particular. For example, there was one, he was an English teacher, and I remember him for several reasons, for several things. He was not a teacher you messed with. He had that reputation. He was not a teacher. Now, you got to remember, this was the late 70s. I remember he had been severely injured in an automobile accident. He walked with a cane. And because we lived in upstate New York, where there's lots of snow and ice, he had ice spikes in his cane. And I remember sitting in, I think it was sophomore English, and we were all reading, and we heard this odd sound, and we looked up, and there he was, sharpening the points on his cane. And he looked up deadpan and said, I'm getting ready for the freshman class next period, and went right back to work. Now, today, parents would be aghast. Oh my God, he did that. But again, as a student, what did I see? Why did I remember that particular incident? It was a simple way for him to let people know we don't mess with them. He never injured a student. He never threatened a student. He never harmed a student. It was a humorous way to make a point. He was making a joke. Today, I imagine a teacher doing the same thing would be summarily fired for making a veiled threat to students. But I remember him not simply because of this one, I find funny story, but because of what I learned from him. Not English, not grammar, not even the love for certain books. See, the other reason I remember him is we were doing a public speaking module. And every one of us had to get up and give our own little speech. And it was my turn, and I wasn't ready. And I told him I wasn't ready. I was honest with him. I said, nope, I'm not ready. And he gave me one more day. He gave me one more chance. Next day I stood up. I did my little presentation. I remember what it was about. It had to do with the Air Force version of Top Gun. I don't remember the name of it. Red Flag, I think, maybe. And how Israeli pilots came in and beat all the top American pilots by learning how to defeat them with their own technology. Now, why do I remember that? It's one of the first times I got up and spoke in front of a group of people. I did so because, A, he encouraged me to do it. It wasn't simply a class to do. It wasn't a check mark to be completed. It was encouragement. And it was the opportunity. And now I speak in front of people around the country. In part, because he gave me the chance. But you see, he couldn't be a teacher today. I doubt it. I doubt he would get away with what he did today. I don't know if he would have taken the vaccine or not, or if he would have protested. I guess part of me thinks, yeah, he would have protested based on his love of freedom of thought. But what does it say about the American people that we no longer, that we seem to shun teachers that have a slightly different point of view, that are willing to connect with their students on a way that works for the students, even if it may offend a parent or two? About teachers who encourage their students not simply to complete the lesson, but to learn something about themselves. To learn, are you a good public speaker? Are you an actor? Are you good at computers? Are you good at math? Are you good at in woodshop? Finding out what it means as we grow up. Not as a replacement for parents, but as an augmentation. He's one of the teachers I remember. These 30 plus years out of high school, I still remember him. I can still picture him standing in front of that class. But in New York City, if you have a religious reason to not want to participate in a medical experiment, if you're a nonconformist, you're not allowed to teach. And whether you think that, you know, vaccinations and masks and whatnot are the best way to deal with COVID or not, what does it say that our teachers are now cogs in a machine? That they're trained to teach every student exactly alike, like we're bricks in a wall. Not to find what is unique and help them, but to simply complete the assignment that's given them. Now, that's what's going on in New York City. The other big national thing we've seen a lot of is the National School Board Association, who sent a letter to the Attorney General and the Biden administration wanting to treat disagreeing parents as terrorists, as domestic terrorists. Now, sure, this came to an uproar, and many of the board said that we weren't involved, and there was a lot of pushback and a lot of things going on, but they say sunlight's the best disinfectant. So as this incident has been investigated, we're finding more and more information. See, the executive that wrote the letter is reportedly to have known that Merrick Garland had a memorandum targeting concerned parents before it was published, at least according to information obtained by Parents Defending Education. Now, again, we're talking about the National School Boards Association. And remember, schools were community-based. They have school boards, the idea being that that which governs closest to the people is most responsive to the people. The parents would have the most influence. But now we have state and now national school board associations where those policies are homogenized and pasteurized and will turn into another bureaucratic mess. Now, it's reported that Chip Slavin, the then interim executive director of the National School Board Association, knew about Merrick Garland's memorandum that called on the FBI to use its authority against parents who threaten or use violence against public school officials. Now, to my knowledge, there were no incidents reported of parents using violence against public school officials. And any threats of violence, well, I'm sure could be attributed to passion, you know, and you know, the frustration of a parent dealing with a school board that completely ignores the parent's authority, the parent's responsibility. But what we're seeing is a national school board group apparently working with the Biden administration in an attempt to quell dissent on how school boards are teaching our children. See, the Parents Defending Education have submitted FOIA requests, and as they're going through the emails that they're obtaining, they're finding an association between the NSBA and Biden's FBI, Biden's Department of Justice. What does that say about our schools that the National School Board Association, to which many of our school boards were members of at one point, was now working with the federal government because they were concerned that parents were reacting to what the children were teaching, were being taught? I remember, it was quite a few years ago, I was talking to a young mother, and she was visibly upset. She told me a story of her daughter, who I think was about 8 years old at the time, who was in the local public school. And again, I lived in a small town in upstate New York. We had a pretty good school district. It wasn't New York City. It wasn't a major metropolitan area. We didn't have a lot of those problems. But she was visibly upset because, I believe her 8-year-old daughter and her class was given a sexually explicit lesson without the parent's knowledge or consent. Being a good parent, she went to the principal and asked why she was not given the opportunity to opt out. According to her, the principal said, well, we find that if we give parents the opportunity to opt out, they tend to do it. What does this have to do with the NSBA? It's this attitude that the specialists know better. The principal, the teachers, the school boards, or more importantly, the people developing the curriculum and the other organizations promoting these different curricula know better than the parents what their children should be taught. That parents aren't even involved so that they can deal with whatever the possible aftermath is of such lessons. Now, back 20 years ago, the issue was sexually explicit education. Now we're dealing with sexually explicit education down into the elementary school, into kindergarten. You've got racist teachings into kindergarten. You have debunked historical narratives being taught as fact in our schools, being promoted by different organizations and different groups, whether it be, again, the NSBA, the 1619 Project, Planned Parenthood, take your pick. But you have all of these agendas and all of these special interest groups pushing information in on our children And we find that some of these groups are willing to get the federal government to usurp state power, investigate, and attempt to intimidate parents for something that is not a federal issue. See, search as you might, you will not find regulating education as a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution of the United States. You won't find it. But how can a parent trust that when they place their children in the care of a public school, that what the experts think is the proper thing to do has anything to do with what the parents think is right? See, the reason I find it interesting is the National School Board Association that did this is how often do we see major metropolitan areas, when things become national, they set the agenda. See, the class that the young lady I was talking to that her daughter was exposed to, the 1619, the CRT, most of what's being taught in schools today from a political and social agenda doesn't fly in what's euphemistically called flyover country. Most of the country doesn't want anything to do with this. But you see, it's the major urban centers where these national organizations tend to find themselves, and they have a base of operations and a base of support from, that tend to push these changing ideas, these progressive ideas, on the rest of the country. And I know there are people that are going, well, you know, progressive, that's a good thing, right? We want progress. Yeah, but progress towards what? See, progress itself isn't what should be lauded. It's progress towards good, not progress towards evil. Progress towards a better society, not progress toward a more divisive society. And ultimately, who gets to decide? Is it the parent? Is it the school board? Is it the National Association? Is it the FBI? The sad part is the answer to that question is most likely going to come from a court. It'll be a state court or a district court or a circuit court or the Supreme Court. But it will be a government that decides ultimately what rights you have as a parent over your own child. And that is sad. See, again, when I was a kid, although we all went to public school, our parents were at least involved. My mother made sure I did my homework. My mother talked to my teachers. My mother was involved. My father would help me with certain projects. There's things he was better at than my mother. But even then, public schools were not the best places. Classrooms were large. It was always a complaint. There's too many kids in a classroom. So my mother volunteered. She came in and helped. And nowadays we see parents being shunned away from what their children are being taught, shunned away from the process in school. There's even news reports of teachers telling students to keep secret what they're learning in class, to not tell their parents. That should be a red flag that there's something wrong. When you want to hide what you do, unless you're planning a surprise party, unless you're if you're hiding what you're doing, probably what you're doing is wrong. Because you have to hide it. And that tells us something about the education system. It tells us quite a bit about why my wife and I homeschooled our daughter. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, I want you to check out a couple things. You know, we're talking about education, and I started the Constitution study specifically to help the American people educate themselves about the Constitution of the United States, the idea that we should read it, we should study it, we should teach the rising generation to be free. All is, you know, that's what the Constitution study was created for. But how? How do we do this? Well, there are a lot of things. So you can find out all the details at constitutionstudy.com. You could try some of the books. You want to read. And by the way, read to your children. If you want to help your children to understand liberty and freedom and rights in the Constitution, read to them. And when they're old enough, let them read it for themselves. It's not that hard. You want to get into study? I have a good book, The Constitution Study. There's a deep dive study into the Constitution. I'm doing an online study. It's great for families. Once every 2 weeks, we meet online. We discuss the part of the Constitution. We read it. We debate it. We discuss it. We ask questions. We answer questions. And then all of it's recorded so you can go back and watch again later. Or if you missed the live version, you can watch the recording. All of that's available at theconstitutionstudy.com. Now, I'm also going out and I'm doing a tour. I said, I like speaking in front of people. I know, I'm weird. Most people are terrified of getting up and speaking in front of a group of people. I love it. So I'm putting together some speaking engagements for 2022. I don't have anything set in stone yet, but if you want to find out a bit more, go to constitutionstudy.com/tour. Find out what types of things I talk about. And then if you'd like me to come to your event, speak to your group, we'll just fill out the form at the bottom of the page. We'll get in touch and we'll see if we can put it on the schedule. But all that is available, again, at constitutionstudy.com. Now, the other thing please check out is healthycell.com. You know, my wife's got me taking vitamins. It's a married guy thing, right? Most men don't think about it, but my wife has me taking vitamins. And recently we've been taking Healthy Cells vitamins. One, they're pill-free, which is nice. They've been reinvented. They've been researching. They've designed them to help boost your system at a cellular level, whether it's your immune system, help you sleep better, help you focus better. They're all available at healthycell.com. Now, we're coming out of cold and flu season, but it's still a good idea to keep your immune system healthy. Again, I travel a lot. I encounter a lot of people. So I take the Immune Super Boost. It helps keep my immune system strong so I don't get sick. That's the best thing we can do. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. All you have to do is go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. You can try any of their formulas, the REM sleep, the super boost, the focus and recall. Just make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCl to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCl may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're talking about education and the state of education and what we can learn from it. And maybe I'm being a little nostalgic because it's bringing back memories of, again, when I was in school and when we were homeschooling our daughter. You know, when you homeschool, one of the questions that we're frequently asked is, aren't you worried about socialization? And I can't take credit for this. I actually got this from a pastor. His daughter also homeschooled, his daughter and son-in-law. And when asked that question, they said, yes, we're very concerned about socialization. That's why we're not putting them in public school. Public school is the lord of the flies. The kids seem to not only are in charge, but look at how they treat each other. Look at the examples of, we see the stereotypical school situations with bullying and peer pressure and intimidation. Is that really what we want our children taught? So now we see the Los Angeles Times editorial board writing an opinion piece claiming that, hey, you know what? Schools are doing fine with the kids' masks. The kids have gotten used to wearing masks. It's premature to drop the mask mandates. You know, they've gotten used to it. They've been indoctrinated into it. They've been socialized into accepting it. Well, if anyone's watched the video, there's a video going around of a teacher telling students that they no longer need to wear the mask, and the reaction is epic. They're cheering, they're screaming, they're tearing their masks off, they're having a great old time. But it reminded me of this idea of social conformity. Now, we can talk all about the developmental hindrance of young children wearing masks and not able to see the teacher's mouth or other students' mouths, the difficulty in reading all the body language cues with so much of the face covered and all that. But to have the Los Angeles Times think, you know what, masks for children are just fine. And that it's up to the government to tell parents that they must force mask their children. That's the problem of socialization. See, when I was young and when my daughter was young, our primary concern was what will our daughter learn socially in a public school? Now it's more, what will children be indoctrinated with? What will the social norms that will be drilled into them? What is the social norm of wearing a mask? It's conformity. It's, we don't care about rights. We don't care about the law. Sit down and do what you're told. And even in states and cities that have remove the mask mandate. And some gone so far to say it is now against the law to mandate masks on children. We still have schools and we still have districts and teachers that are mandating masks. Mandating conformity. Mandating uniformity. And they're doing it under the guise of, well, we need to do this because children who have a statistically zero chance of dying from this might get sick. That they might spread it even though there's not a single peer-reviewed blind study that shows that. The law says they can't do it, but they do it anyway. We have bureaucrats teaching our children not to make health decisions for themselves, not to listen to their parents, not to even consider their own, have their parents consider the children's own medical condition. No, no, no. Conformity. Uniformity. Everybody must be brought down to the same level. And that really is the sad part about all this. All this call for equity and uniformity and everybody gets a trophy and there are no winners and losers and we can't use red ink because it makes students feel bad. It doesn't elevate students. It drags them down. So we look at this push, again, from the bureaucrats, from the school boards, from the teachers, from the principals, and now, not surprisingly, from the media, that says we have to treat all these children like little infected. We don't need evidence, we don't need proof, we don't need law. We need to treat them like little subjects that must be molded into the image, into the conformity with what the state wants. Now, not all states are going about it the same way. Some states are, as I said, have removed mask mandates. Some have outlawed mask mandates. But one high school in Illinois, I think it's taken it to another level. Now, you have to remember that an Illinois court called the statewide mask mandate for students null and void. It was a violation, I believe, of both the U.S. and the state constitutions. Yet we have this Southwest Chicago suburb that's still forcing students to wear masks or risk the consequences. The dreaded consequences. What are the reported consequences of not wearing a mask in Downers Grove North High School? How about segregation? I thought we'd gotten rid of segregation. So approximately 100 students who chose to go maskless in classrooms, they've been smeared. They've been listed as a distraction by the school and escorted out of the classrooms by security guards into rooms away from the masked students and teachers simply because they exercised the freedom to not wear a mask in compliance with a court opinion. The students are the ones following the law. It's the school district that is violating the law. But it's the students that are being escorted and segregated. Now, if you're a parent or if you're a taxpayer in the Downers Grove North High School school district, ask yourself, why are you paying taxes to a school district that refuses to teach your children? They're pulling children out of class because they are following the law and the school district doesn't like it. Just, why can't they just sit silently in the classroom? They're not allowed. They're being forced to sit quietly, segregated in different rooms, to miss their classes, to eat lunch separately. They're being told that they are other because they don't follow the district rules, even when those rules are in violation of a judge's opinion. They're told they have to use separate bathrooms. They're given a time limit in the bathroom. They're not allowed out in the halls except in limited numbers. They are not allowed to be near any kid wearing a mask because supposedly they are the ones that are a distraction. No, 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 no. This is the tyranny of the school district. This is the tyranny of a bureaucracy punishing children for following the law. Now, the district claims that the students had access to classroom material via their school's Chromebooks, but not the classes. Not the debate with the cheat, with the instructor, with the teacher, not the group environment. No, 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 they're not allowed. And there's even talk about them being bullied by the teachers, not getting classwork and homework in time to do it in a timely manner. And this has effects. One of the students said that their grades are already dropping. Is this your idea of an educational environment? One student said, "We've seen a lot of disrespect for our stance on masks." He said, "And just on the way to get lunch, you'll get yelled at multiple times by people sitting at tables maskless with all of their friends." This is what education has devolved to. We have students being forced to comply with an order that violates apparently state law, state constitution, at least according to a judge. We have bullying and intimidation, not simply by the students, but by the administrators and the teachers. We have a blatant dereliction of duty by segregating and refusing to provide the educational material to students that simply wish to comply with the law. And I wonder how many parents are involved. See, that's the thing. I remember as a small child that an incident happened in our school, and my mother was there and in the principal's face. Why isn't that happening now? Why are we letting schools dictate to parents how to raise their children? Why are we letting schools dictate to parents medical choices for their children? Why are we letting schools tell us how to raise our children when supposedly they work for us? Because the American people have forgotten that very important fact. Now, I found another article, which again looks at the other side of the aisle. See, a teacher in Virginia was fired for refusing to call a girl a boy. And this is now going to the state Supreme Court to decide whether or not the local school board violated the teacher's rights. According to, I believe it's teacher's lawyer, no government can force any Virginian to express messages that violate their core beliefs. Now, this is an interesting one. I believe it's blatantly obvious that to force someone to speak something in violation, not simply of their beliefs, but in violation of facts. You know, if a student showed up in school and said their name was Napoleon or Jesus Christ, you wouldn't demand that teachers refer to them by that false name. But we're supposed to refer to somebody, to a girl as a boy, simply because they're confused. But remember how I said teachers can often teach not simply from the classroom and not simply from the book, but from how they deal with things. See, this teacher, Peter Vlaming, is teaching his students something important. The need to stand up against what is wrong. The importance of protecting your rights. Of saying, no, it's wrong for you to try and force me to say something that is not true, that violates my sincerely held beliefs. That is again, patently false. And it's worth doing the hard thing to protect that right. It's worth going to court for it. It's worth, I'm sure, the difficulties he's having because, again, he's been fired. It's worth doing the hard thing because it's the right thing. Teaching is more than simply reciting what's in the textbook. And this teacher is teaching his students the importance of standing up for what's right. Now, here's the question. If he's teaching them that it's right to stand up for what's right, the school board is trying to teach them to sit down, shut up, and do what they're told. To be good little cogs in the machine. Don't deviate from the accepted standard. Take whatever nonsense we say and treat it as truth. Which side will win? Will that be decided by the Virginia Supreme Court? Or will it end up in federal court? What will these children be taught, both by what this teacher is doing, how he is being treated, and what the outcome is? See, this is the part of teaching that I think we've lost. When teachers were teachers, when they came up with their own lessons and they designed an environment that fit their classroom, they could teach on so many more levels. I remember I was a senior in high school and I had a physics class first thing in the morning. And you know, seniors, high school, early morning classes, you had a lot of absentees in many classes like that. Not for this teacher though. Because this teacher understood his classroom and how to engage with them and teach them not simply by reciting from a book, but by engaging them in the education process. We used to do experiments. I remember we did an experiment. We were doing a module on vectors, and he built a homemade accelerometer as an example of the application of vector math. And I remember he taught me something extremely important, and it had nothing to do with vectors. See, he was showing how, you know, as you push the glass along the table, it would point in the direction of acceleration, and all were great. And then he stood up in the middle of the room, and he put the jar in his hand, and he held it out at the end of his outstretched arm, and he spun in a circle. And the accelerometer showed an acceleration. And he asked a simple question. Is it true? Is it right? Or is the accelerometer wrong? 50-50 shot, relatively intelligent, pop up my hand, teacher calls on me. I say, yes, there's an acceleration. He said, why? Now, the book merely did mathematics and stuff on vectors. It talked about accelerations. It showed examples of acceleration. This teacher took it to the next level by bringing it to something we could see and handle and touch. And he taught us about acceleration. But he taught me about the importance of understanding why something is so, not just that something is so. See, as I stammered and I struggled for an answer, and all the other students were raising their hands, his answer was, no, give him a minute to think. Give him the chance to work this out. I came up with the answer. But what he taught me that day was not simply that acceleration has both magnitude and direction. He taught me the importance of asking yourself, why? Why? And that is a lesson I've brought through with me for over 30 years. It's not good enough for someone to just say, that's the answer and that's the right answer. We want to know why. That aggravating, annoying question little children ask all the time, why, is actually the most important question we will ever ask. So what do we do? What do we do? Now, there's been a big push towards getting kids out of public school. Still, I believe 90% of students will attend a government-run school. Regular public school, charter school. Some will get to go to private school, and others will be homeschooled. Homeschool was a choice my wife and I made because we thought it was the best answer, and I believe we've been proven right. We were required to take standardized tests to prove that we were actually teaching our daughter, who routinely scored in the 90th plus percentile. She was always, very good. I think the lowest grade she got in any of the standardized tests was 85. And that was for a topic we hadn't even covered yet. So there are many people trying to figure out, how can I homeschool? Can I put the needs of my child above what would be easiest for me? Sure, it'd be easy. Treat school as a giant daycare and not worry about it. So we're seeing a growth in homeschool. I've seen it for years. It's been growing. I had family members long before we started homeschooling who homeschooled. They taught us a lot. Homeschooling has not only the advantage of a small class size, but the flexibility to teach what a student needs when the student needs it. It also has the advantage, if you've got multiple children, of teaching children to teach other children. And I'm seeing it as a reaction to what's been going on. There's been a lot more interest in homeschooling. And there are a lot more opportunities for help in homeschooling. I'm looking at a series of conferences across the country where homeschooling parents can get advice, curriculum, other support, other ways to help and figure out how do we do this homeschooling thing. But I recognize homeschooling's not for everyone. At least, not in the standard sense. You see, whether your child is completely homeschooled, they go to a public school, a private school, a charter school, you should still be doing some homeschooling. You should be aware of what your child is being taught in school, and you should teach them at home to fill in the gaps. So one of the interesting things is, again, studying the Constitution isn't studied in any school that I'm aware of. I've yet to see a school curriculum that had a lesson plan that actually involves studying what the Constitution says. Oh, we talk about when it was debated and when it was ratified and when it was amended, but they don't really talk about what it says and what it means. So even if your child goes to a good school, be it a public school or a private school, find out if they're being taught the Constitution, if they're being taught about their rights, and then fill in the blanks. You want some help, you want some advice, you want some tools, you can find out more at constitutionstudy.com. That's what it's there for. I've got everything from coloring books to a deep dive study to even a high school level curriculum for helping people study the Constitution as a homeschool process. And again, even if your children are going to a public school, teach them at home, because the government is not going to teach your student, your child, that the child, that the people are the masters of government. They don't. They gloss right over that. Because ultimately, the responsibility for educating your children doesn't belong to the state. It doesn't belong to the school district. It belongs in the hands of the parents. And for too long, we've gotten lazy. We said, okay, parents just said, we'll just hand them over. 5 years old, hand them over to government. You educate them. We're going to back off. And that has led us to this position of children who don't have the skills they need, who've not been taught civics and what it means to be a citizen of a free country, that have been indoctrinated with political ideas and ideologies that are anathema to the parents and to the, in many cases, to the society around them. Education is a responsibility of the parent. I heard one mother give a great answer. She was asked what she did for a living. She said she did the most important job in the world. She had the most important job in the world, raising the next generation. I love that answer. Let's worry less about putting, you know, moms and dads in the workplace, and let's make sure that our children are educated. And sure, it may mean a sacrifice, but I think in the long run, the investment is worth it. If nothing else, remember this. Your children will choose your nursing home. If you live long enough to need a nursing home, your children get to decide. How do you want them educated to make that decision? Do you want them educated to the lowest common denominator? You cannot have anything better than anyone else because that's wrong. That everybody has to be equally miserable. Everything has to be equally bad. Or do you want them to learn that while you're not guaranteed it, with hard work, with sacrifice, with application of your skills and endeavors, you can do better than you are now. You may not do as good as the person next to you, but you can do better than you are now. So parents, let's take this opportunity to help educate our children. My daughter is in her 20s, but I'm still trying to educate her. I don't do it by sending her to school. I do it by giving her advice and answering her questions. And ultimately, that is the true corrective of these constitutional abuses we've been living with. Now be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings. It's more important than ever that we share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, so we can help secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to America's future generations.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.